welcome to the Friday edition of 7 Investing Now. I know it's hard to tell. Days all blend into each other, but it is Friday. My name is Daniel Brooks-Pline, but you, of course, you can call me Dan. I'm joined today by Manisha Sammy, Matt Cochran, and Austin Lieberman. Manisha, how are things in your neck of the woods? You have not been on in a while.
You know, things are a bit busy. We have COVID-19 in full rage, so a lot of information on vaccines. But, you know, aside of that, we have medical conferences. So there's a lot of great news that's coming out. So it's busy, but a lot of good news.
So, Austin, you are north of me in Florida. What's the situation? I would say here in West Palm Beach, pretty good mask compliance, but definitely some people not doing it. What's it look like where you are?
Go out and see a lot of people in masks, but you know, I got Starbucks today and I was in the drive thru and I was just thinking the people inside were wearing their masks. Right. But then I saw them multiple times, like use their hands with no glove to fix their masks. So I wonder, from a food compliance type thing, if there's actually more germs potentially introduced by people, wearing masks and then serving food, cause they're constantly touching their face. So just an interesting thought.
It is a lot easier to drink your coffee if you take your mask off. I will certainly go there. So on today's show, we're doing something special. We went to Twitter and we asked you, our audience, for stocks that are under the radar. And we got a couple hundred suggested. We did about a dozen on Wednesday's show. We're going to do another dozen today. Feel free. This is an interactive show. Feel free to share your comments, your questions. Of course, we're going to hit what we're watching. Matt and I are going to talk about the end of the movie business in what we're watching. A lot of great stuff coming up. But let's start with Manisha. You're going to talk about a stock suggested by two people, Jason and Matthew and Sandeep David. And that's Pacific Biosciences of California, ticker symbol PACB. Manisha, this is not one I'm at all familiar with.
Sure. So PacBio is a sequencing-based company. So right now we have Illumina. They do short-read sequencing. They have about over 90% share of the market. So there's a huge end market for sequencing. So any gene therapy, gene editing system, or even immunotherapies, you need DNA sequencing, and even the diagnostic market. So the current question is, are short reads enough? So PacBio does something very different from Illumina, which is long reads. We claim that we do, or that we're able to sequence the entire human genome, so all 3.2 billion base pairs of DNA. That's actually not true. 1% of the DNA we can't address. Short reads just it's not specific enough and it's not powerful enough. So PacBio, in my opinion, is one of the strongest contenders in long read sequencing. And you can see that with some of the partnerships they've had recently with Invitae, with Children's Mercy Hospital, and even Microsoft. So I think they are someone to look out for.
How speculative is it?
Oh, it's definitely not speculative. It's more, honestly, the reason why PacBio has been under the radar is because of their price point. Illumina, you know, in a few years, I fully expect that the cost of whole human genome sequencing will be less than $100. Right now with long reads, before it was $10,000. Right now it's probably hovering around $3,000 or $4,000, but the cost is declining. And as that cost decline, or as they write down the cost decline curve, PacBio should become more relevant, especially in diagnosing rare diseases. And especially with the collaborations that they've made recently, I think, you know, Illumina might be on the defensive, who knows? But I think PacBio at the very least, and long read sequencing, that's here to stay. So it's just a matter of, you know, who's going to be the contender in long read DNA sequencing.
We're going to go from PacBio to PrecBio, which probably nobody calls. That is a Precision Biosciences, ticker symbol DTIL. Manisha.
Yes. So Precision Biosciences. So I love gene editing. So we just talked about 3.2 billion base pairs of DNA that you and I have. And, you know, you can have just one of those letters, so AT represented by ATGC, just completely change, and you might die a year from now because you have a rare disease, which is terrifying. But that also is, I mean, the beauty of kind of life is that our bodies and cells are able to repair itself without any intervention. With gene editing, though, you know, sometimes our bodies don't work. You can directly go in and correct a gene that's faulty and then just lead a normal life. So right now in the limelight, so we have CRISPR genome editing, but then there's a different type of genome editing called Arcus Biotechnologies, or I guess that's our editing system. So Precision Biosciences uses that. So it's differentiated. They have the patents. It's called a homing endonuclease. So by that, basically, it's more specific. So you can expect less off-target effects. But at the same time, you can also expect that less people know about it. So if you go to literature and scientific literature, scientists don't know too much about it. So basically, the onus is on Precision Biosciences to produce that knowledge and database of information. Right now, they're working on off-the-shelf CAR T therapy. So CAR T therapy is an immunotherapy. So it takes a patient's cells and re-engineers it and puts it back into the patient so that it directly kills cancerous cells. So they're going after non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and acute lymphoblastic leukemia. So that's really interesting. They're doing it off the shelf. So you don't have to have, you know, two or three weeks of a waiting period before you can get the therapeutic. It's a very competitive market, you know, CAR T, any immunotherapy. So I think the judges are still out in terms of who are going to be leaders, but I think they're on the right road, given that allogeneic CAR T, in my opinion, is where immunotherapy is headed.
Is this tech eventually, and when I say eventually, maybe it's 50 years from now, but is this kind of how we engineer ourselves to live, you know, 200 years or some crazy amount of time by turning off diseases, by, you know, engineering weight loss, who knows what?
It's possible. There's an entire slew of private companies that are just focused on basically longevity research. So, you know, the part of DNA, so so they're, you know, bundled up in a chromosome, and then we have, you know, X amount of like numbers of chromosomes, and biology is very complicated. And then we have something called telomeres, which can predict how long we live. So longevity research is very exciting right now. We have companies that are focused on that. I am a little skeptical of a lot of these companies because we just don't know what we don't know. I think we're maybe probably, I would say 2 decades away before we have any kind of stance on that, or maybe a little earlier, but people are definitely looking to change our genomes so that we live forever.
I am very much hoping to be a real life Lazarus Long. If any of you are Robert Heinlein fans, you would get that reference. One more for you, Manisha, and then we'll let you go get a cup of coffee while Matt and Austin take over. Sandeep David wants to know, and this is actually a company I own based on you guys talking about it, Invitae Corporation, NVTA.
Sure. So Invitae, to me, is the Amazon of genetic testing. I think it would be a disservice to Invitae if people compare it to a 23andMe or Ancestry.com. And the reason why I say that is because Invitae does clinical diagnosis of diseases. So yes, they're using DNA sequencing technology. For example, I mentioned earlier that Invitae and PacBio are partnered. They are basically Invitae is a low cost way of, you know, if you're planning for a family, will my child have a certain disease? So preparing for that. And right now, in the latest quarter, their average sales price for a test was less than $250. That's incredible. And they've done a tremendous job of securing reimbursement. This is still a nascent market. And what I love about Invitae is that they are an end-to-end provider. They don't want to just, you know, here's your genomic data. They want to be like, okay, well, here's your genomic data. What does this mean? So they want a lifetime customer. So it's, okay, here's your genomic data. Here are genetic counselors that can tell you how to read this report. Because, I mean, to be honest, none of us actually understand what these genes mean. What does it mean if I have more protein synthesis of X, Y, and G gene or whatever it is. What do I do now? And not only that, but this year alone, they've had a record number of acquisitions. And that is quite impressive. And it's not just willy-nilly, let me just buy everything that's out there, but it's for a broader picture of end-to-end counseling. So it's how do I use AI for kind of predicting who's going to have what sort of hereditary disease or what does this variant do? So this patient has this cancer or this disease. Which therapy out there is best suited for them? So actually helping the doctor decide what's the best therapeutic option. So I think that is kind of an area that they're growing out a bit. And that's just fascinating.
This is something we could do an entire show on, and I guarantee we will. Thank you, Manisha. Before we get to Matt, I want to bring up that a week from today on 7 Investing Now, that's the program you're watching, we're going to do something we've never done before. We're going to have all 7 of us from 7 Investing. There's more people that work there, but we have 7 lead advisors. We, of course, also have Sam Bailey, our marketing director, who's producing this show, directing this show behind the scenes. Next Friday, we're going to have everybody on, and we're going to answer your questions. We'll share some prompts on Twitter. We're going to take questions live. And of course, right now, if you're watching, feel free, no matter what platform you're watching on, make a comment, say hello, ask us a question, whatever you like. But Matt, we're going to bring you up next. We're going to talk about MITK. That is a ticker symbol MITK. That came to us from Miguel Angel Jimenez Montes. Matt, your thoughts on MITK?
Yeah, MITK Systems, it's a $500 million company, and its primary revenue stream comes from its mobile deposit solution, which is used today by like consumers in the US and Canada for mobile check deposits. So when you deposit a check via your bank's mobile app, there's about a 30% chance you're using MITK Systems technology to do that. It also has a mobile verify solution, which verifies a user's identity online by scanning like an identity document, like say a driver's license, which helps enable an enterprise to verify the identity of the person with whom they're conducting business. Now, here's the thing about MITK. Its growth is fine, and its 2020 fiscal year, revenue grew 20% year over year, and its forward PE ratio is a very reasonable, like about 17, 18. It's well under 20. The thing about MITK and what's been holding its stock price back is the perception that checks eventually are going to go extinct. So that while it's growing fine now, and its short-term and medium-term prospects are probably fine, it's constantly called into question because of that long-term dynamic of are checks just going to disappear?
And that's a pretty good question.
I can't say I entirely disagree with it. I've looked at the stock before to like take a position because I'm constantly attracted to its growth and its valuation, but I've never taken a position because of that question.
Yeah. So let me go around the room. I'll start with Austin. The last time I wrote a check, well, we write one check a month. We pay for our parking space in our building via check. When we move in 2 weeks, my guess is I will write no checks a month. Manisha, how many checks do you write a month?
Sorry, there was on mute.
Sorry, I threw you completely for a loop coming to you out of the blue from nowhere. But how many checks a month?
Zero. I don't remember the last time I wrote a check.
Austin, do you know where your checkbook is?
We write checks to nannies sometimes for our kids, but even that is moving to like Venmo and different stuff. So you can have my checks.
That's not a great idea. Like to me, basing your business on checks, Matt, seems a little bit like they verify like your pelts that you're trying to barter with or your shiny beads or whatever it is. Like, are they addressing this possibility and moving on?
Well, like I said, they're trying to go into these other solutions like their mobile verify solution, which identifies people online by scanning an identification document. But like the thing is, their checking business is still growing. And that's what catches people off guard. And it's what has me questioning it sometimes, like when I do look at it. But I just can't get on board with it. I can't.
Yeah, it's a tough one for me. Matt, Isidore Good wants to know about Flying Eagle Acquisition Corp, FEAC. This is an interesting one here.
Yeah, so Flying Eagle Acquisition Corp, and full disclosure, I have a position in this, a small position, but a position, is a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC for short, which is an alternative to a traditional IPO as a way for companies to go public. This approach involves a financial sponsor initially creating a shell company. They use the shell company to accumulate funds from investors, and then they find and merge with another existing privately held operating company. And in this case, Flying Eagle has already found the company they're targeting. It's Skillz, spelled with a Z at the end. Skillz is basically a platform game developers can use for organizing and hosting game tournament, like video game tournaments. And then they monetize and distribute payments to players in the tournaments. It has anti-cheat and anti-fraud tools the developers can easily plug into their games. It has social features. It manages loyalty rewards for games. So it's a way game developers can easily incorporate all of these cool features and tools into their games. As of right now, more than 10 million game developers have used its platform, and it's now been used to host billions of gaming tournaments. Through the first 9 months of 2020, Skillz grew revenue 91% with, listen to this, Austin, gross margins of 95%. Soon after Flying Eagle announced its deal to acquire Skillz, my friend Peru Saxena on Twitter alerted me to the deal through DMs. He's like, take a look at this company. And after looking it over, I did take a small position.
That I am out at Skillz with a Z. That is
sounds too good to
that
be
is absolutely not a spelling. That sounds like a failed, not very good rapper. Skillz with a Z.
That gross margin's too high, Matt. It's red.
Good afternoon, Doris and Renee. Good afternoon, Cheyenne. We're starting to see some comments. We're also starting to see some spam in the comment section, which is that's a new one. I've never seen that before. Matt, we've got one more here, and it's from @_WeLikeMike. I don't know anything about this company, so I'm going to assume it's golf related. Par Technology Corp, and that is ticker symbol PAR. I'm probably wrong. Matt.
It is not golf related. It actually develops and markets products that assist hospitality operators around the world. And when I say hospitality, think mostly restaurants to better manage their money, materials, their people, and their guest experience. It's a leading provider of point of sale solutions to restaurants and retail outlets. It currently has about 100,000 installations in 110 countries worldwide. And much like Square has done for small businesses, PAR Technology wants to build out an ecosystem of products and services for restaurants around its point of sale solutions. So this includes things like obviously accepting card payments and chip cards, but also more exotic things such as payroll, inventory management, integrating catering and delivery options, integrating mobile and online ordering for restaurants. And by doing this, the company believes it can become a sticky product for its customers. Some of its customers include Arby's, DQ, Five Guys, and Sweetgreen. Through the first 9 months of 2020, revenue grew 15% year over year. So the company's been around for decades, and it hasn't done much, but it has a new young CEO. I hope I'm saying this right. Savneet Singh, who has some investors pretty excited. The company's goals are ambitious, and it's a crowded field with lots of competition. For me right now, it's squarely in that wait and see category to see how it performs in the coming year and the coming quarters. But it has some people very excited.
You're watching 7 Investing Now, and here's what we're doing. We're talking about under-the-radar stocks, stocks that people don't talk about enough. I'm Dan Klein, and we're moving to Austin Lieberman. Austin, you want to talk about, this comes from KW, you want to talk about Digital Turbine Inc. That's a symbol APPS.
Yeah, and Sandeep also brought this one to our radar. So this is a company actually owned shares back in like January, maybe December of last year. And it was only a small position. And I no longer own shares because I sort of consolidated my portfolio into companies I was more confident with. Turns out to be a huge mistake, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But we can't own, you know, every company. And when it comes down to it, we got to have belief in the companies that we own and familiarity with them, right? So we all make those mistakes though. But anyways, the company basically simplifies content discovery and delivers it directly to mobile devices. So it's a on-device media platform that powers frictionless app in content discovery, as well as user acquisition, engagement. And then they also offer monetizing opportunities for different apps that are on these mobile devices. And so the company is performing really well over the last year to date. The stock is up 492%, which is kind of ridiculous. Their quarterly year-over-year growth, revenue growth was 116% in their last quarter. They've got pretty decent gross profit margins, but they're understandably a little bit low for the amount of investment that they've had to do at 41%. And then the company's only trading at a forward price sales ratio, a 1 year forward price sales ratio of about 11, according to Y charts. And it's a $3.5 billion market cap. So it's an interesting company. There has been some, and I'm not super familiar with these news headlines, but the reason I sold it back when I did was because there was some unfavorable news headlines about management previously, not necessarily recently. But it's a company I think is interesting, and it's not excessively valued in this crazy world where a lot of companies are arguably excessively valued, and it could have a lot of growth potential.
And this is also like, this is the new frontier. I'm not speaking specifically about this company, but the amount of content that's out there is overwhelming, and finding what you like, what you want, we're not doing a great job with it. So there's a lot of room for growth there. Again, not a comment on that company. We're going to talk about Medallia Inc. next. That's MDLA. That comes from Sandeep Dahaya, Jawalant Bhatt, and at Lotus Infinity JB. Again, Austin, this is not one I've ever heard of before.
Yeah. So, Dan, if you've taken, you may have taken surveys about using a product or a service or something like that, and maybe that Medallia is, that's the type of thing that they do. It may have come from Medallia. There's a couple other companies out there that do it, but in general, that's kind of what they do. Is they call it the Medallia Experience Cloud, and it captures experience data from signal fields emitted by customers and employees. Of course, they've got AI technology, which is kind of a buzzword, to analyze structured and unstructured data from these signal fields across human, digital, and Internet of Things interactions. So what that's saying in layman terms is not just through doing surveys, but also through monitoring how people interact with apps and devices and how apps and devices interact with each other, they can also pull customer experience data from that. This is a company that I'm personally not interested in owning. I've never owned shares. There's just a lot of competition out there, and I'm not a huge fan of how the business is operating compared to other opportunities. But Q3 subscription revenue was $96.9 million, which was up 22% year over year. And then their third quarter total revenue was $121 million, which is up 17% year over year. So it's only growing at 17% when we're talking total revenue. And it's got a forward price to sales ratio, a 1 year forward, which again, that's kind of what I look at, because it takes some growth into perspective, is around 8. And it's got a market cap of about $4.5 billion. And so again, interesting company. I don't own shares. I'm not particularly interested because there's a lot of competition out there, and I don't think they're one of the best performing companies around.
I will say to people in the comments, we appreciate you suggesting new companies, but we've got a pretty packed show. So we're happy to take comments on the companies we're talking about on the show in general. We're probably not going to add any to the list because there's so many here. And there's one more from you, Austin. Eric Horowitz wants to know about Progeny Inc. That is PGNY. I am learning a lot today. Austin.
Yeah. Out of the three that I had, this is probably the one that I'm most interested in. They basically are engaged in, and they specialize in fertility and family building benefits solutions. And their clients include employers across various industries. So basically they look to sign up employers that then want to offer fertility benefits. That's kind of their main market right now, to their employees. And this has been an interesting company this year because they got crushed, just like pretty much every other company out there, through COVID. We all know what COVID has done to employment, especially in the United States. But the long-term opportunity and market for this company especially as we recover, I only see this market getting larger and more important. And the company is performing well. They recently reported third quarter revenue of $98 million. They raised their guidance for the full year of 2020 and up to $345 million, and that reflects 48% to 50% growth. And then if we're just looking at market cap and then that forward price to sales ratio, again, remember we've got about 60% year-over-year revenue growth, and it's only at a about a 6 forward price to sales ratio, which is pretty reasonable given the opportunity. And the market cap is only $3 billion. So that's one that I'm very interested in. I could see it being a much larger company in the future than it is right now. And it's not they're in a real market and they're providing a real service to people.
People watching, like Growth to Growth and Ashwin, if you want us to talk about some of the companies on your list, feel free to hit us up at 7Investing on Twitter. We're going to do next Friday, all of us, taking your questions. So we are more than open. And normally we would take some of the questions on the fly, but we've just got so much here. We're going to go to me now. I'm actually going to kick off what I'll think of as the entertainment part of the show. Going to talk about a couple of stocks. Then we're going to seg to Matt doing what we're watching. We're going to talk about what I think is the end of the movie theater. Alan Sokoloff wants to know about CBS Corporation. That's VIAC. It's kind of a legacy ticker from being Viacom. So here's the problem with CBS. Do you really want to own like the fourth best or the third best broadcast network with an older skewing audience and not really a great digital platform? To me, there's just better people to buy in this space. And you know, look, it's a decent package of content, but in the streaming world, we're only going to pay for so much. Are we really getting CBS All Access or whatever they're calling it now? I don't think we are. And then TJ, which is a great Twitter handle, at Contrarian Duck, wants to know about Fubo TV. Fubo TV is a subscription TV service, like a Sling TV. It's sports-centric, and there's some possibility of them adding sports betting. This is one where I don't know who the winners are going to be, and I feel like there's every chance that this is going to be so splintered that none of these are big winners. You know, Sling TV is right now the leader. Hulu Live is probably right there as well. Fubo TV to me is very speculative. They don't own their content. So much of their revenue goes out to paying for ESPN, for all these streaming networks, for all the sports content they're re-airing. To me, it's a low margin business. It is not one I would want to be in. It is now time to move to what we're watching. Remember, you're watching 7Investing now. Matt, this one shocked me yesterday. Warner Brothers, which is owned by AT&T, came out yesterday and they're going to send all 17 movies they have planned for theatrical release this year. They're going to be on HBO Max for a month, and they're not going to charge you more on HBO Max. So they'd already said that we're going to do this for Wonder Woman. And that's fine. That's like Disney pulling Mulan. You know, it's not unprecedented. But basically, they said, if you get HBO Max, you get all our movies this year. To me, that's it for movie theaters. Matt, your thoughts?
Yeah, so this is big, Dan. And remember, like you said, it's owned by AT&T. Warner Brothers is owned by AT&T. And all 17 of their movies next year are going to be on HBO Max. It's going to be for a one-month window, starting when the it's released in the theaters. It'll be on HBO Max for a month, and then they're taking it off. But with 17 movies, that's going to be a pretty regular cadence, more than one per month. And this includes big movies. So this includes movies like Matrix 4, the big screen adaptation of Dune, The Suicide Squad. So there's big movies included in this. Just getting into some of the details, it probably will include more generous terms for movie theater owners.
Let me jump in. What could that even mean? If they gave movie theaters owners 100%, it's 100% of what I'm going to guess is nothing. That very few people given the option during a pandemic to watch a movie in their house on a service they probably already have. It doesn't seem like there's a big call to go to theaters.
No, it doesn't. And they do that so the theaters just won't boycott the movies, right? Because if they didn't do that, the theaters would just say, well, we're not showing your movies. And I think Warner Brothers is trying to capture that slice of we want to have our at least some profits from the theaters and our cut from that and recoup some marketing expenses, but we'll also want to this to really juice up our streaming service. And Dan, I think I have a horrible hot take for this. And I think I disagree with you a little bit. Like, it definitely could be a game changer. This definitely could be the moment we all look back in a few years and say, this is what sounded the death knell for movie theaters as we know them. But like, I wonder, like, is there any chance, like, you know, after months of pandemic, we're just going to see, like, consumers are going to be hungry to get out when they can and maybe go see, like, big movies like Matrix 4 on the big screen. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty right now, and I don't know if this is the death of the movie theaters for sure.
So let me go conspiracy theory here, Matt. So I think they're trying to kill movie theaters. And here's what I think is going to happen. We have about two-thirds too many screens, because it's already kind of been established that we'll go see Matrix 4. We don't really want to go see, you know, a light comedy, a rom-com. Like, those are films that play better at home. Whereas, sure, Avengers or the next Star Wars, it's good to see those in a theater. I think this ends up with a consortium of studios, probably including Netflix, probably including Disney, probably including Warner Brothers, owning some amount of movie theaters. Matt, am I wrong there?
I don't know. I don't know. You know this area better than me. I don't know. Dan, is there a possible future maybe where the studios like Warner Brothers, like Disney, own the theaters and and they own them and operate them, and that way they control the entire vertical? There used to be laws against that, but I think those laws were repealed. Is there a future where that could happen?
Those laws were repealed. I see this as a Hulu situation where the entire industry, it's not going to make sense based on the output. If you're putting out 17 movies a year, you're not going to need a chain of 12 screen movie theaters. But if you start to team up with your competitors, you hire an independent CEO, I think that's the only way the movie theaters survive. I want to talk about this more. We'll do a podcast on it at some point, but I want to move on. Misha, you wanted to talk about Pfizer has scaled back its 2020 COVID-19 vaccine production targets from 100 million to 50 million doses. They also said they're confident that in 2021, they'll be able to supply 1.3 billion doses. What does this mean in the general field of life getting back to somewhat normal?
Sure. So I think, you know, I'll start off with what we've done in these past 10 months. Has been amazing. Never before have we been able to approve a drug after a pandemic this quickly, or by drug, I mean a vaccine. So this is from research, understanding the strain, and then kind of going through the entire process, and then having a manufacturing production kind of cycle where we can produce enough that we can commercially go out there and be like, hey, do you want a vaccine? So that's amazing. In the U.S., there's still yet to be one that's approved. So Pfizer actually was one of the first to be approved by a Western country, and that was the U.K. earlier this week. So the U.K. bought about, I think it was two million doses for their citizens. So that's really encouraging. But one of the things that this highlights is it's not that easy to create a vaccine. Part of the reason that, and they did not anticipate this, is the cold storage issue is not to be trivialized. Sorry about that.
This vaccine has to be stored at negative 80, which is a bit of a problem.
Right. And that also means for hospitals in rural areas, how do we even ship vaccines to those areas? And they don't even have the cold storage capacity to even store these vaccines. So right now, distribution is going to be a huge issue. But what that also highlights is that we can't just bet on one company to come out and be the winner in term, well, quote unquote, winner. No one's winning. We're just trying to address a problem. But we need basically a cohesive group of vaccine manufacturers coming together. And it's almost kind of a tablet. You kind of pick and choose, which flavor do you want of a vaccine? Do you want the Pfizer vaccine? Do you want the Moderna vaccine? And then there are a lot of earlier stage companies, Inovio, Arcturus. So Arcturus is based on mRNA. And with the potential of having a one dose vaccine. So that's really interesting. I'm looking out for that. I think that is also more convenient for people. So just one vaccine, you're done. You don't need a second dose. What we've seen from AstraZeneca's data for COVID-19 vaccine is after you get a second dose, the efficacy kind of drops. And part of the reason is the viral vector that is used to actually give you immunization. So after the first dose, your body recognizes that viral vector as, oh, okay, this is foreign. But then the second dose is like, okay, well, let me make sure and kill that virus off. So you're not getting the full effect of the vaccine. So a single dose is the paradigm. AstraZeneca is doing a tried and true approach to it. Oftentimes it takes about 2 years to get to that. Arcturus, if they're successful, you know, it's mRNA-based, a single dose, so that could be very interesting to look up for. But one of the things that we haven't even talked about, and, you know, having vaccines out there is extremely interesting because all of us want to go outside and play.
Oh, yes, we absolutely do. And I want to be on a plane, even if the plane just flies around in the sky and comes back. So.
Yeah, we all feel that pain. And unfortunately, it's not going to be that simple. We haven't started even, you know, looking at, you know, what's the efficacy rate in pregnant women or for children. For, you know, I think Moderna is one of the first companies to start doing that study. So that is encouraging. But that's going to be a long process as well. And then, you know, with COVID-19 and this novel virus, endemically, how do we treat it? So right now we're still in a pandemic, but afterwards, is this going to be something like the flu where each year do you need a vaccine? We don't know that. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and we will have to see what happens.
Yeah. Let me jump in with sort of one question. So I've been reading about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and it's in third stage trials. It looks like it's likely to be effective. We don't know that answer yet, but it can be kept in a regular refrigerator and it's likely a single dose vaccine. Is that kind of the key to unlocking everything is to have, you know, in the cities where you have these freezers, you can have the two hit negative 80 has to be stored cold. And then in rural places or CVSs, you know, you can have these one take vaccines that can be kept in more, you know, every CVS has a refrigerator, like, you know, you can figure that out. You could use schools to administer them. Is that kind of the key to, you know, getting quote back to normal?
I do think so. You know, we're going to have a variety of approaches, you know, geographically, I think it's just impossible to have everyone have a vaccine that has to be stored in, you know, minus 94 degrees Fahrenheit condition. It's just not possible economically. So what you're saying makes perfect sense. And, you know, part of it is, unfortunately, by the end of the year, if projections are correct, a lot of American citizens are going to have COVID-19. They'll be diagnosed with it. So that provides them immunity in the future. And then, you know, if we are able to roll out enough doses of COVID-19 vaccines, that should be enough to at least protect us all to get back to normal. What you were saying about J&J, you know, go to a CVS, get a shot. Yes, that would be kind of the holy grail of what we'd want in a vaccine. So hopefully they show good efficacy. One thing that we just have to wait with time is the durability of immunity towards COVID-19. And that will, only time will tell with that. So how long do these vaccines work before you need to redose?
Before we move on to Austin, Max Lucas asks a question that I need to give a little context to. He says, Dan, are you still going on your cruise in January? So I booked a few months ago, January and February cruises, and usually I get comped. In this case, I actually paid for them. The prices were really low, and I never expected to go on them. They have been canceled. All cruising has been canceled through the end of February. I expect there probably will be some limited trips in March, you know, and picking up a little bit more in April. But I actually booked those, and this is a financial show, so this is a way to save money. Any cash you put in, Royal Caribbean was giving you 125% credit if your trip gets canceled. My trip got canceled. I can roll that money into my account, use it for other things. I'll probably use it to take friends on trips next year. But Austin, let's get back to it. You want to talk about Sea Limited. They were selected for they're going to be getting a full bank license in Singapore. Give some context. Explain what this means.
Yeah. So ticker is SE. A lot of people out there on Twitter land and that are watching this have probably heard of SE, but if not, just some quick context on the company. So they're a leading global consumer internet company that was founded in Singapore. And their mission is to, according to them, better the lives of consumers and small businesses with technology. And so the big thing with them, they have three core businesses, Garena, which is digital entertainment. So that's a really huge game that they've got. Shopee, which is e-commerce. If we're in the US or Canada, we've heard of this little company called Shopify, kind of similar to that platform. And then they have C-Money and digital payments. And so there's this idea of them getting this banking license. I've heard it, you know, rumors of it over the last, I don't know, 3, 4, maybe 5 months. And now it looks like it happened. And the interesting thing about this company, and Matt here is much more of an expert on fintech and finance, but what this is an example of to me, it's a really interesting way of the approach that C has taken to build a company. It's almost the first company that I know of that has started with a massive game and audience from playing a game that they've been able to monetize. And that's where actually until recently, most of their revenue came from. And now I believe most of their revenue comes from the e-commerce side. But from that initial reputation and game audience, they expanded into e-commerce and then they are expanding into digital payments. And so when we think about how big games are becoming and different, there's different ways that that could be monetized. They're more and more popular. And it just makes a lot of sense to branch out into e-commerce and digital payments. It's not going to work in every country. So we can't just think, hey, there's companies in the US that are going to be able to follow the same model. But C has done it extremely well. And I think that this is just an interesting example of their optionality. I don't know how well it's gonna work for them in terms of banking. I know there's some additional risks, which I think Matt's going to mention briefly, but it's just really interesting to me that the stock, people like the news. Apparently it's up 10% today. And so it's been an exciting story. The stock's done incredibly well and the company has a lot of optionality.
Matt, you wanted to chime in here, so I will give you your 30 seconds to speak.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's just interesting because most fintechs will decide to partner with banks and not actually be the bank. And sure, when they partner with banks, the banks do get a cut, but the banks also hold all the credit liability risk too. And that's what makes like some fintechs like so attractive, because they're asset light, but they can still offer very popular financial services. So what this does, like just for instance, just take like last month when Ant Financial was about to like finally have their IPO and it was going to be the biggest IPO ever. And right before they had the IPO, the Chinese government came in and said, you partner with all these fintech banks. Ant Financial had about 100 partnering banks. And they said, actually now Ant Financial used to source 2% of their loans that they give to people. And the Chinese regulators came in and said, now you're going to have to source 30% of those loans. And they were like responsible now for a much more credit liability risk. And that completely tanked their IPO. And they postponed it. Now it looks like maybe not until 2022 is Ant Financial going to IPO, because their valuation just tanked on that news. And that's because that's the route most fintechs go. They don't want to hold that credit risk. Another example, like a few years ago, PayPal sold their consumer credit to Synchrony Financial. And as soon as PayPal did that, that unlocked so much potential for them. It unlocked a lot of their assets. So now that it didn't have to be like held in reserves for that credit risk, it could be used for acquisitions. And that's when PayPal went on, like started buying like companies like iZettle and like other companies, and it just unlocked their potential and it allowed their valuation to go much higher. So it allows CFI, and I'm a holder in C. I'm a big fan of the company. I like what they do. But it's just an interesting route, because most fintechs will decide not to go that route because they don't want to have that credit liability risk.
You're watching 7 Investing Now. This program is, of course, from the team at 7 Investing. What are we? We're a subscription-based service that gives you our best 7 stock picks each month. Each one of us makes a pick, and we give you not only a 2,000-word write-up on why we made the pick, we also give you access to a video call where all of us present to everyone else, and you get to see what the questions are. You don't just get the bull case. You also get the bear case. You also get what the questions are. We are nearing, and of course, if you want to subscribe, go to 7investing.com/subscribe. Important to get that out there. Thank you, Sam Bailey. Max Lucas, you're on a roll today. Austin, I think you're going to want to take this question, but I want to give a little bit of context. A lot of times when a stock moves 10% up, 10% down in a day, the answer is either there's no reason or the reason isn't that important. It's some dumb thing one analyst picked out. In this case, Max Lucas asked about the big move Fastly is making today. Austin, would you like to comment?
Yeah, and Max, great question. Dan, this was going to be my second what I'm watching today that I didn't know I was watching because it happened in the middle of the day. I did see those rumors. I own Fastly.
The rumor to get it out there is that Cisco is going to buy them. For people who are just listening who didn't see the clip on the screen.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Fastly, shareholder, been vocal about it. The stock has been volatile. I wouldn't be surprised that there's companies interested in acquiring Fastly, Cloudflare. The reason is because they're doing something really interesting and exciting with edge networks, as well as we think about Internet of Things and connectivity in the future. What Fastly does is going to be very important, and it makes them a really interesting acquisition for a company like Cisco, who Fastly could potentially benefit from the large scale enterprises that Cisco already has in their customer base, as well as their enterprise sales. And then Cisco could benefit from the software and the technology and the network that Fastly has, which is arguably, you know, the future. It's not really arguably the future. It's clearly the future. And so it's really interesting. I'm keeping my shares, just leaving them as is. Wouldn't be surprised if it's true. Wouldn't be surprised if it's not true. I hope it's not true, because I want to see Fastly just keep growing on its own. But interesting thing in the news, and it's just an example. Fastly was at like $70 a share 2 weeks ago, and just buy great companies and hold on to them.
And be prepared for volatility. Stocks are moving big moves for reasons that maybe wouldn't have moved them. It's a really uncertain world right now. We've got a long show today, so we're not doing the home stretch. We're going to skip right to our finisher. Sam Bailey, share the graphic. Thank you, Sam. Which company will close 2022 with the highest market cap? Right now, the highest market cap would be Apple. That came in second at 35.2%. About half of you, 49.5%, said Amazon, 7.2% for Microsoft, 8.2% for Alphabet. That, of course, would be Google. I'm not so sure about this. I actually think Microsoft has really big runway. Matt Cochran, you can go first, then Manisha, then Austin. Matt, your thoughts here.
Well, actually, I voted for Microsoft too. You know, they just in so many great spaces for enterprise software, and their Teams now is taking off like 115 million daily active users, which is kind of becoming their operating interface for all their software applications. You know, it's to me, it's in all the right places, but none of those companies are bad bets. And, I really don't know. So that's just my guess. Microsoft. Yeah,
I'm a big fan of all four companies. Manisha, I know these are kind of mainstream companies, but I'm sure you've heard of them.
Sure. And surprisingly enough, I also voted for Microsoft. And because they have a huge biotech play, I think with Amazon, and they probably hate me because I have so many Amazon returns that are just like stockpiled in the corner of the room.
They actually track that and have an algorithm where at some point they will shut you off. So that is important to remember.
I don't think I'm quite there yet, but it's mostly because it's snowing out here and I just don't want to trudge out in the snow. Amazon and my life are intertwined. But that being said, Microsoft has a lot of room to grow when it comes to healthcare. They partner with Invitae. They're also doing a lot of AI work for guiding CRISPR therapies. So as they're moving into healthcare, I think there's a lot of room for them to grow and the market cap to grow, at least in that sector.
I'm 90% sure Austin wrote in Fastly on this poll, but Austin, your thoughts?
Yeah. There's 99% no way any of those companies catch up to Apple by the end of the year. It's Apple's got a $2 trillion market cap. The next closest is 1.6. There's no way they're catching up. And I think
2022.
Oh, 2022. I guess I need to pay attention. Apple. I like what they're doing with their new the M1 release. So I think it's going to be Apple.
I don't know. I have the iPhone 12 and it is in no way different from the iPhone 11. I'm sure it does all sorts of things that are unnecessary that I will
never
use. That's
exactly why Apple's going to keep, why it's going to keep, you just bought a new phone for no reason. Look,
I'm going to do it again next year too. That is the problem. This was a marathon episode. It was a marathon week. We're going to be back on Monday at noon, but remember next Friday, we've got the whole team and we're taking your questions. It's going to be a very special show. We've never tried that. And also there's the train wreck effect. Can I do a show with seven people? That is going to be a little tricky to figure out as well. So it might go well. It might go terribly. It will be entertaining either way. But that finishes up today's episode of 7 Investing Now. If you have questions for us, send us an email to info@7investing.com. That's going to go to whoever on the team it's most appropriate for. We try really hard to get back to you quickly. And of course, we're all on social media. You can see our Twitter handles as we go. But if you want to hit the whole team, hit us up at 7investing.com. Folks, team, this was an excellent show. I'm tired. It's been a long morning. We've done a lot of video today. So for Misha, for Austin, for Matt, I'm Dan Klein. We will see you Monday.
A reminder that people on this program may hold positions in the companies that are mentioned. Buying and selling stock carries financial risk, which could include the loss of capital. The views in this program should not be taken as personalized advice. Before acting on any of the information provided, listeners are encouraged to consult a financial or tax professional.